The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google. What makes them industry giants? Get ready to take a peek inside and learn their secrets of success. This is Silicon Valley Insider, the show that demystifies the Valley and helps to elevate your business to the next level. Now, your hosts for Silicon Valley Insider, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome and Happy New Year from Silicon Valley Insider. I'm your host, Keith Kuth, my co-host, Jonathan Ziegler. And we can say that 2018 is going to be a new year with lots of up-and-coming events in the technology world. But Jonathan, I would think that 2017, with all the different things that happened, 2017 will be known for sure as the year of the data breach.
Absolutely, Keith. First of all, thanks to everybody who's joining us again in the new year in 2018. And also, thank you for your continued support last year. Silicon Valley Insider obviously has done a lot of research, and we've taken this pretty seriously. The breaches last year were incredible. You know, many of the tech magazines and the Tech Inside media sources are calling it the year of the breach, like you said. And it basically boils down to this. We heard about it on a near daily basis. The bigger ones were making the news at the end of the year, but there was, of course, the Equifax breach. There was the breach of one of the world's largest consulting companies, you know, from the standpoint of the fact that our good friends at Deloitte were breached, and they've been named several times in the past as the leading cybersecurity consulting partner. So they were breached. And there were many, many others that we talked about. I think one of the things that's important is that, as we've talked about in the past on some of our other shows, this year, the breaches demonstrated really one thing, and that it's the weak point of most organizations' security, and it's as weak as the people who work there. And I think that's a really, really critical point. And I want to, you know, talk a little bit further about that, but I want you to keep going, okay?
Yeah, so the theme for today's show is really protections and predictions. And we'll be going over a lot of different types of trends that will be happening as we wrapped up last year, 2017, and going into 2018. One of the hot topics still in the news and also related to data security and breaches is this whole concept of North Korea. And we found out end of year the Trump administration had thought that they were the authors of the WannaCry virus. And additionally to that, we've been hearing that when we think about the proximity of North Koreans to South Koreans, that North Korea is, well, I don't know if many folks know this, but South Koreans are considered one of the most advanced in cryptocurrency. It's estimated that one out of five South Koreans hold cryptocurrency. And why I'm telling you this is that more and more folks around the world, Americans included, are delving into owning things like Bitcoin or Ethereum. So South Korea had, at the end of the year, been hit hard by different types of cryptocurrency, including Bitcoin. Just massive thefts of coin. And when we had Doug Park from Park and DeBage on our show, Off the Blockchain, we had talked about how the crypto algorithms that cryptocurrency has, those have not yet been hacked, although people are trying. But the exchanges and the wallets that people use, those have absolutely been hacked. And for, you know, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars for some of the exchanges.
So let's talk about that for a second, Keith. This is one of those interesting things that I'm happy that we're talking about the beginning of 2018, because I know there's a lot of predictions about the growth of these cryptocurrencies for 2018 and beyond, sustaining growth from the 17 era and even before that, where we talked a little bit about you know, the crash considerations of these currencies and how Bitcoin itself specifically has crashed six times in 2017 and what that looks like to the average consumer. This is one of those situations where a lot of people are wanting to dabble and get into it, but it's not necessarily an easy thing to get into. the concept of the wallet and the electronic consideration for holding your currency, becomes really intriguing from my perspective. How does that work? I mean, I know we talked with Doug Park about it, but how does that work, you know, from the standpoint of if I'm the average consumer, I don't have a mining machine per se, but I want to buy into Bitcoin. How would I go about doing that? Just for our audience.
Yeah, just to recap, cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, there are those holding the, in essence, the analogy is to currency, but not exactly because the digital format. You have to put that cryptocurrency somewhere, and that somewhere is digital wallet analogous to the wallet in my back pocket. And that stores your Bitcoin or your cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm.
Exchanges, just like a stock exchange and then your bank account, is where you can trade those cryptocurrencies. And then if you don't want to store it in your own digital wallet, you can leave it there. And that's where a lot of these thefts are occurring. You've left it in the virtual version of a bank holding your cryptocurrency. That exchange, that bank gets hacked in the case of South Korea. And now you don't have it anymore and you've lost it. And a lot of these exchanges have gone bankrupt because they don't have the currency anymore to repay,
right,
or to put back to the folks that hold the currency with them.
Right.
So I think when you just mentioned it, people are delving in this left and right. I heard that Coinbase, one of the most famous exchanges, at the height of 2017 and everyone just trying to get into the Bitcoin bandwagon, they were opening 500,000 digital wallets a day.
500,000?
500,000.
A day?
A day.
That's more than most of the financial institutions in the world combined from a transactional perspective.
Well, what's funny is if you know enough about Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, transactions are taking longer and longer for the amount of time the algorithms, what we call the consensus algorithm,
right,
to validate the transaction. Mm-hmm. But the transaction to open up a wallet is instantaneous.
Right.
So 500,000 digital wallets a day, right? So if you imagine if something like Coinbase ever got hacked,
mm-hmm,
which they haven't yet, that's a lot of cryptocurrency at risk.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things to consider from the standpoint of what we have been talking about, which is risk management and risk mitigation all along. You know, going back to what we do for our consultancy, we provide risk management guidance for corporations and public entities as well as privately held entities. And this year, it's been kind of a boon from that perspective that a lot of people are actually understanding that there's a lot more to it. As I mentioned earlier, with the risks, you know, you're only as weak as your strongest member of your team. And if you've got a cyber risk issue, kind of related to where this cyber wallet consideration comes from, that's one of the things that you really need to evaluate and be very steadfast about moving forward, especially in 2018.
Yeah, thanks. I think that for today's show on protections and predictions, we're going to talk a lot throughout the show with statistics about what's happening in a number of different areas, but what we'll call the term confluence, right? So there's a number of different things happening at once. Silicon Valley, we talk about our show that we're here in the Valley, we see a lot of technology, we see a lot of emerging trends, but it doesn't only apply just to Silicon Valley, it applies to the rest of the world. So why we were bringing up the Koreans in the beginning was there's also this theme about North Korea influencing, they're doing crypto mining as well. So when we talked about Bitcoin earlier, you can buy it, you can trade it, but also if you have the resources, and right now it's really expensive to do it, for Bitcoin being an advanced cryptocurrency, you can mine it yourself.
Absolutely.
And that takes a lot of computing power. And we talked about how it takes a supercomputer.
Right.
But it also can take, and it was funny because you mentioned this a couple of shows ago, about a South American Starbucks potentially,
right,
being hacked and having lots of those patrons' computers getting their crypto being mined for them.
Yeah.
Well, it now appears that the North Koreans are behind that as well.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, in the meantime, before we take a break, I want to remind our listeners about two upcoming events that Silicon Valley Insiders in support of. And one is the World Crypto Economic Forum, which is January 15th and 16th in South San Francisco. There'll be details on our website at svin.biz. And also the Programmatic Disrupt Forum on January 25th in San Francisco with a discount code for tickets, also on our website at svin.biz. And we'll be back shortly, but if you want to ask a question, set up a time to interview or be on the show, give us a call at 888- 888- 828 888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. We'll be right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler. And welcome to our Protections and Prediction show for 2018. In our last segment, we were talking about how we closed 2017 as the year of the data breach. And beyond just the data breaches, just breaches in general, we talked about how in previous shows, whether it was Uber or Equifax or Yahoo or Deloitte or Accenture or Apple, just name household names and very big names, that breaches were all over the news. And we don't think that'll be any different in 2018. We also think that with all those breaches and other types of things happening at the same time, the government, the U.S. government, is definitely looking towards more and more regulatory scrutiny. And we had talked also about in previous shows that regulatory scrutiny has been one of the secret things for Silicon Valley success, that they haven't really had to worry too much about it because the things that they were dealing with back then, Jonathan, didn't really have to do with health and safety or necessarily the financial industry the way it is now with payments. So we're seeing a lot of that happen. And why I say that is Ro Khanna, congressman, Democrat from the Silicon Valley, he was interviewed on MSNBC a couple of days before the end of the year. And he had talked about how Silicon Valley companies are greatly admired. They have like an 80% approval rating. And he self-admitted that in Congress, there's only about 11% approval rating. So, but what he also said was that companies like Facebook and Twitter and Google and Apple, social media companies, so their social media divisions, they weren't doing enough to protect the public, and that Congress was turning their sights on them, and there was possibly a whole new slew of regulations in order to make sure that they are doing everything they can to protect consumers.
Well, when we talked about this back at when Equifax breach was announced, we made that really clear that Equifax's customer is not the consumer. And it's similar in a lot of these cases. Now, granted, Apple is a consumer-facing company. Google technically is as well. And so are a couple of these others. But the fact of the matter is that, for example, with Equifax, they didn't care about the fact that yours or my data was potentially made public. What they cared about was the fact that the consumer credit company that bought that data from us was being serviced. And so I think that's one of the reasons why this regulation and the regulatory scrutiny is coming down the pike. I want to go back to your statement there about the fact that Silicon Valley companies are widely admired, you know, 80% approval rating, so to speak, and 11% for Congress. That's intriguing to me. And the reason I say that is because if you don't work for one of these companies, but you use their services and you take it for granted, by the way, because you have an iPhone or you have a Samsung, you know, Galaxy Note or something similar, all of those devices are being served by every one of these Silicon Valley companies. You take it for granted. But if it doesn't work, where's your approval rating go then? You know, that's one of those considerations. So as far as Congress is concerned, I'd love them to get to regulation because I think we need it. It's becoming very, very intriguing to me about how they are looking at the conception of privacy today, because the online privacy considerations are so different today than they were just 2 years ago.
Well, you make a really great point there. I think that what Congressman Khanna is saying is exactly that, that these companies enjoy these 80% approval ratings. And in the Valley, in many consumer brands, we use something called Net Promoter Score. So the Net Promoter Scores are high, and they and that includes direct consumer brands such as Apple or Samsung or Amazon. And then it also talks about, he was directing his current comments towards social media, which is Facebook and Twitter,
right,
that they also have these high approval ratings compared to the government, but that they only take credit when it's things that are good. They actually don't normally mention when things are bad. So the specific example is for both Facebook and Twitter during Arab Spring, during the election here in the United States in 2016, that a lot has come out that potential influence happened through social media, or what the government believes things that have been influenced through social media. And not enough was done. And so what Roe was saying is that he thinks that with the rise of artificial intelligence, machine learning is just one solution.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot more on the system side to validate that news articles are in fact accurate.
So the fake news concept is going to become less and less reality?
Well, actually, one of the predictions we might get to later is that by 2020, most of our news will be fake, and we have to actually validate all of it.
Wow. So it is going the opposite way.
Yeah. Well, that's why we say it with data breaches, mm-hmm. Breach prevention, mm-hmm. fake news, that more and more companies are starting up to combat these things,
right?
These negative things through artificial intelligence, machine learning.
So it'd be really interesting to see if there are a couple of startups out there that that have kind of gone into the AI or machine learning realm as far as social media terminology validation. I know that there's a bunch of analysis and analytics firms out there that I've worked with in the past where they actually take keyword and sentiment analysis and they can turn it around and, you know, let the customer service representatives at a company like eBay or PayPal, for example, know that, you know, somebody's talking smack about them on a chat bot or in a chat room and that they might want to address it. I mean, I had the same thing happen to me with Delta and United Airlines, where I tweeted about a bad experience on United and the Delta representative immediately responded to me and said, "Hey, we're welcoming you with open arms."
Yeah, we see that as a trend, a good trend, that lots of companies are adopting social media proactively mm-hmm. in order to keep their customer ratings, yeah. customer satisfaction high.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of the positive comments Rokana made about this, because I know people freak out about upcoming regulation, especially in Silicon Valley, which companies here are not used to that, is that he's inviting the folks that are drafting this legislation to come to Silicon Valley to understand how all these companies operate in order to really get to the heart of when you make a regulation, you know, please understand why you're writing it.
So in other words, kind of like along the lines of the net neutrality vote, understanding what the ramifications might really be.
Yeah, that's exactly the point, is something like net neutrality. When you're going to write a regulation about that, what are all the impacts?
Yeah, absolutely. He's a smart guy. I mean, I'd like to see if we can try and get him on the show in the future, because I think it would be very intriguing to hear about how his process is and how this particular effort is going down the road.
Yeah, he had mentioned how he'd visited, he was invited to visit a region in Kentucky, and they self-described themselves as the Silicon Holler of of Kentucky, and it's a whole up-and-coming startup region. It was meant as a loving statement around their self-affection on hillbillies.
Right.
So it was really cool. It was really great that there are other regions who adopt the Silicon moniker and are really trying to push entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah, we've talked about that in the past, where there's areas around the world that are very enamored with Silicon Valley, but it's lost a little bit of its luster over the last couple of years because of the fact that the big companies have kind of smacked down a lot of the startups that would compete in certain areas. But that being said, I think it's a very interesting consideration around the whole breach and risk and considerations around what we've been talking about for the last 6 months, that it's evolving, and it's evolving a lot faster than it has in the past. And I think things are going to get worse before they get better, so to speak. And I'd really like to continue this conversation with you, Keith, in terms of where we think things are going to look up in 2018, with the cloud and with the risks around cost. And is it really cheaper to move or safer to move to the cloud, for example?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest trends or predictions, which is still just ongoing, is that more and more companies are adopting cloud technologies, which we've talked about in previous shows, whether it's safer to move to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And also at the same time, people are trying to combat cyber risk. And so there's going to have to be really strong solutions in that regard, which when we get back, we'll talk about.
Yeah, excellent. All right. So again, as a reminder, Silicon Valley Insider is supporting two upcoming conferences. One is the World Crypto Economic Forum, January 15th and 16th in South San Francisco. You can visit our website at SVIN, that's Silicon Valley Insider. .biz, SVIN.biz, and also the Programmatic Disrupt Forum on January 25th in San Francisco with a discount of 20% for your tickets. Again, come visit the website, SVIN.biz. And if a question, a comment, would like to appear as a guest on our show or challenge us, give us a call at 888-828-7846. That's 888 888- 888-SVIN. We'll be back shortly.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler. And once again, Happy New Year. Today's show, we've been talking about protections and predictions for 2018. We spent a lot of time on what's happening in Congress, the U.S. government, thinking about regulations due to all the breaches that occurred in 2017.
The year of the breach. Hopefully, they're going to try and figure out how we can fix that.
So in previous shows, we talked about the European Union having a more advanced concept of data protection for its citizens called GDPR, and that will take effect in May of 2018. Jonathan, you and I also predicted that due to all the breaches, Congress was going to put their foot down and do something very similar. So I was reading that the draft of the U.S. version of GDPR is called the National Breach Notification Law or Data Security and Breach Notification Act.
Right. And that was something that had been attempted in a various watered down version last year?
It had been, and it was brought back, and now it's being brought back.
More teeth.
With a lot more teeth. And it was specifically quoted as, because of the Uber data breach a couple of months back, the new CEO, Dara, he had said that he didn't know about it, but some evidence shows that he may have known about it for at least 2 months. So this is what Congress was saying, that they needed to put some teeth behind it. So the teeth behind that, in case you're interested, was that it requires 30 days to notify victims and authorities of a breach.
Mm-hmm.
It's punishable up to 5 years in prison to knowingly conceal a breach.
Oh, wow.
And the rule won't supersede existing data protection laws like HIPAA for healthcare.
Right.
Or for Gramm-Leach-Bliley or GLBA for those of us in the banking industry on cyber risk. So, but the key again there is that we had said that the U.S. wasn't going to just not do anything about it. They're definitely thinking and will very soon enact a regulation.
And I think this is an interesting point too, because we have to realize that we've heard, and you'd said it personally, that you'd heard a bunch of different CISOs, you know, chief information security officers simply say that there is a fear, but nothing's going to change until heavy fines really start. So this is a really interesting law potentially with a lot more teeth and a lot more fine potential. I mean, right now GDPR in Europe is, what is it, 4% of annual profits or 20 million euros, whichever is more?
Yeah, whichever is greater.
Yeah, whichever is greater. So that's a pretty big hit for a company to take if they have a breach. And I understand that it's a daily accumulation. Isn't that true?
I'm not sure about the daily accumulation. All we need to really know there, when we talked about Equifax last year,
right,
we said that Equifax would have had a $17 million exposure.
Right.
But actually, if you know, you compare 17 to 20 million minimum.
They would have paid 20.
They would have paid 20.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's a big hit. And I think that's a very important point that these CISOs are actually starting to realize that if this regulatory issue comes down the pike and it does become law, their companies are going to be on the hook for a lot of fines.
Well, what bothers me with some of the CISOs we've talked to is that they're basically saying they don't really expect the new regulation to change anything unless
the fines
are enforced.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But we know the fines are going to be enforced because that's what, think about it. An international company, which is every one of the names that we mentioned in our first segment, mm-hmm. Apple, Facebook, Google, they're all international companies, right? Every one of them is going to be exposed to both of these potential laws. I mean, GDPR obviously is going to come, is coming down and takes effect, like you said, in May. They're going to get fined whether they, you know, have that in place because that's already there. But if they wind up with a U.S. regulation as well, that's a double jeopardy.
Yeah, they'll get fined twice.
Yeah.
But that's where we think this is headed. There are certain things that people in their workplaces and businesses and homes can do to protect themselves. So we mentioned this during the Equifax breach, but you really need to create strong passwords for your accounts and your systems.
Or passphrases, as the case may be.
Yeah, and that's where I think a lot of facial recognition, voice recognition, a lot of biometrics are coming into play as one of the predictions that will take over passwords because passwords just aren't strong enough.
Right.
You need a patch, and we said that patching your system is to keep your systems and your software current. A lot of the things that happened with the WannaCry virus, which affected the UK and China heavily, was because their systems were running very antiquated software. And so patching means you just keep that up to date. For companies, they need to put in monitoring programs, which means that they have systems or they're paying for services that monitor their own systems, whether in their own data centers and colocation facilities, so places that run their computers, or whether they're in the cloud. And if you need to get started with that, Jonathan, I'm sure you can explain.
Yeah. This is one of those situations where if you don't know how to get started on securing what you're trying to accomplish with your business or business unit, you can give us a call or you can email us directly. This is what Guardian Insight Group specializes in, the risk management and the risk mitigation. We'll find somebody to get back to you. And you can reach us for that at gigsv.biz. That's G-I-G, S as in Silicon, V as in Valley, .biz. And again, you can call us toll free at the 888 number, 888-828-7846, which is SVIN. Or you can reach us again at svin.biz. So there's two sites and one phone number. Just give us a call. And if you have any questions on that, or you can email us. Everything is confidential. And we obviously aim to help our customers alleviate 100% of their risk if we can do that. But this is where we get started. So I think it's a really important point from you to look at the monitoring systems. We have partner companies that we work with for endpoint protection, as well as risk management and mitigation. We also have a team of experts that can come in and evaluate where your company stands. Higher than normal penetration testing, which a lot of people are familiar with, can be done. So we can manage that for you. And same thing, if you have a technology audit, a risk, or a compliance role, I know you've got some more on that one, right, Keith?
Yeah, if you're in any of those roles, technology, audit, risk, or compliance, and your job is what we call in the banking world the second line of defense, so really you're overseeing that your businesses are doing what they should be doing, oftentimes there's this fear or analysis paralysis, and we think about just the huge scales and volumes of breaches, so 143 million consumers with Equifax, 57 million consumers and drivers for Uber, 3 billion email accounts with Yahoo. Don't let the numbers scare you. These really could have all been prevented through proper security controls and audits. And so, like Jonathan just said, if you don't know where to get started, reach out to us, give us a call. It's what we love doing for our clients.
Or even if you do know what you're doing, let us come in and do an audit and a review and get you prepared for everything so that you can make sure that your systems are rock solid and that 2018 is a better, stronger, more safe year for you.
Well, that's exactly what second line of defense is when we talk about it in a banking construct, and I know it's just starting to come out with other industries. It's that even if you know what you're doing in the first line, you still need that extra protection internally to make sure that everyone's following. What we said in the top of the show was that the number one finding out of all the cyber breaches is that companies, their own internal IT teams and their CISO teams, no matter how great they are, there's a human error is the most common point of failure. We talked about the there's a Huawei router vulnerability that's very similar to called Satori that's out right now. And even though it's out there and because people figured out how to infect these devices with an IoT, Internet of Things virus, the number one way for the world to combat it is just to change the default password on those routers. That's a human error thing because the factory ships them out so that people can configure them easily. But if they had shipped them out with a default password, a regular password instead of a default password, their fear of getting more customer service calls.
Yeah.
But that's, again, you have to have education and training.
I think that's an interesting point because I think even, going to the home router systems where you and I have, Xfinity, for example, as a service provider, when the router comes, it comes with a preset password, but it's not default.
Right.
That's an ironic little twist that I think some people figured out. Interesting points. I think this is one of those situations where we've got a lot coming with the cloud continuing in 2018 and with endpoint protection and people really having an issue. And I think, that it's going to get worse in the next couple of years before it gets better because the cloud services migration that a lot of big companies are moving to and the amount of information being gathered and stored is going to become very, very large. And again, that human factor is going to become really interesting because the lack of accountability is really going to become the linchpin, if I can say that.
No, you can. I mean, that's where you were just starting to talk about cloud services, cloud adoption. So companies moving off of their own computer systems and moving towards the cloud is going to increase the rapid pace in 2018.
Yeah. Didn't you say something? There was a statistic that I think we had, and I got to validate this, but last year it was a $90 billion spend on cloud security. Is that the specific number?
Yeah. In a previous study, whether it was 2015 or not, they said that the U.S. was already spending $90 billion on endpoint security, which includes cloud.
Right.
And that last week we had Steve Bassi, CEO of PolySwarm, on the show, and he'd said that the new prediction of spend will be $200 billion by 2020, but that even with all this spend, nothing's really changed.
Right, because again, it's the lack of governance and the lack of risk management and some of the other challenges that are around keeping track of the infrastructure, for example. I think this is one of the interesting things. We've got a bunch of different points that we've talked about in this show around cyber risk and cybersecurity and the cost factors. I think what's interesting is there's a bunch of surveys out there that have just been released today, for example, that in a survey of 300 IT professionals, for example, that there have been 10 or 12 different things that are going to come up as far as cloud and commercial usage. And I think on-premise private cloud being the decline coming, you know, by 2020, just 27% of cloud workloads will rely on-prem. So that means that there's going to be a lot more that's physically not associated with these companies. And I think that is a huge risk consideration right now, you know, in terms of keeping track of the infrastructure, in terms of the IT compliance and the security. I think there's a lot of this that's going to become really interesting. And like I said, it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, I mean, we'll do a whole show on cloud deployments for 2018. The theme of all these surveys was that companies driven by mostly cost is that they need to adopt cloud technologies faster.
Mm-hmm.
And we're saying this, and these surveys with the numbers in them prove that companies are unprepared for the security risk that brings, and the cost savings they believe they'll get from cloud will be evaporated by the cost of defending their breaches.
Well, I think it's an important point because they don't know what's going on. There's a trust issue. There's a cost issue. I think we're going to have to come back to that for sure and do an entire show on that. But it's definitely one of the predictions that people are going to migrate further to it. So when we come back in our final segment, we're going to talk a little bit more about this whole risk and these predictions piece. But again, if you have a need to get in touch with us at Silicon Valley Insider or Guardian Insight Group, you can reach out to us at 888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN or via the web at svin.biz. That's Silicon Valley Insider, svin.biz. And we'll be back in just a little bit.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your hosts, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler. And this is our 2018 Protections and Predictions show. Jonathan, we were just talking about in our previous segments today on how 2017 was the year of the data breach. And through that, lots of regulatory things are happening with the U.S. government. Lots of talks around a data breach notification law similar to the GDPR of the European Union. But I think this just all talks really back to the rate and speed of change and disruption.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've seen a lot of that this year in 2017, in the past year, and then, you know, coming forward. There was a survey from North Carolina State University, and basically it was talking about the disruption being the top risk for most of the corporate people that were interviewed. And basically what they said is 67% of their survey respondents who were board members and executives felt that disruption and other market forces may outpace their organization's ability to compete and or manage risk appropriately. And I think that's what we're all about, is managing risk and helping companies figure out what the most appropriate approach to their risk portfolio and their risk appetite looks like. And I think that's a really important point for us because of the considerations in this particular perspective on risks for 2018, the top 10, we've talked about a bunch of them already, but one that's really stuck out to me is that the fact that corporate culture in a lot of these companies is inadequately prepared to handle this. And basically more than 3 of 5 board members and executives expressed doubt that their culture could sufficiently encourage the timely identification and escalation of risk issues that might significantly impact the achievement of their strategic objectives. So to me, that sums it up. If your board and your executive leadership team cannot have a culture or encourage a culture of escalation and identification and management of their risks, then they're stuck in the water.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, this closely related to that risk you're talking about from the North Carolina study was the second place risk was resistance to change, which is what I think of when you just statement you made that corporations are not ill prepared for the disruption that's taking place in their industry. And we see this where we talk a lot again about banking. Banking is actually very strong in risk management. They do that because of the regulatory environment they're subjected to, but that also prevents them from being as fast in adopting new technologies. So with fintech, payments, blockchain, these are companies that don't even have the notion yet of a traditional board of directors. Some of them aren't even companies yet.
Right. It's the same thing that we've talked about in past episodes where we talk about rocket builders and rocket riders. These are guys who are building the rockets and just shooting them off.
Right. And when you think of something about Bitcoin, which is really a network, or Ethereum, a blockchain platform that people call Bitcoin 2.0, those networks, once they're released, there's nobody governing the network itself. People should understand that it's not like a corporation. I came from Cisco Systems. It's not like a company is running this network for you.
Right.
It's more like Internet 3.0,
right,
where it's a network that's out there and people are leveraging that as a resource. So this goes back to things we talked about throughout today's show, with the South Koreans being heavy invested in Bitcoin or blockchain cryptocurrency, that they're one of the most advanced populations doing it every day, but they still get hacked and they still get their stuff stolen.
Right. That's a big deal. I mean, I think the thing that we've got to remember and we've got to remind our listeners and our customers as well is that it's all about being conscientious, managing and mitigating as much risk as you possibly can. And then if you're willing to, you know, have the appetite after that, then go ahead and jump in with both feet.
Right. So I think one of the key predictions of 2018, and we'll be talking about predictions throughout the beginning of the year, is that blockchain is not a mature technology yet, meaning that even though there are different ways of writing algorithms, it's really still nascent and there are still new platforms being developed every day trying to be the better Bitcoin, the better Ethereum.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of that, what is happening is a lot of these companies realize with the money potential that they have to generate and the valuations they're getting, that they need to increase their governance.
Absolutely. And I think governance is the key to anything. Self-governance, regulatory review from a standpoint of an industry perspective, and this kind of bodes well with the results of that survey as well, again, where the chief data officer is actually gaining influence in the enterprise. And this is from Gartner, actually. And the research report finds that the role of the corporate chief data officer is actually gaining in importance and influence because those enterprises that are actually recognizing the value of data analytics to drive their growth in revenue and profits are actually evaluating why the chief data officer is so critical. And I come from a big data background, and so this has been something that I've espoused for years and years. And I think the prediction that I would make is that 2018 and even into 19, the chief data officer's role will become much more prevalent and actually front and center from the standpoint of actually securing the data that these you know, enterprises are looking to work with.
Well, this is the prediction where Silicon Valley itself is going to grow up in 2018. The role of a chief data officer and the rise of regulations. We talked about it before the end of 2017 that at a conference I spoke at, all the topics were around cannabis, which is legalized as of January 1st in California, fintech and blockchain, and Internet of Things. All those will be making news this year. I know we'll have a lot to talk about, and all of those will be driving further regulation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got a perfect storm that I think is coming for data exposure, and I think we've got to figure out how to help our customers and our audiences figure this out. So again, if you'd like to get in touch with us and have us come in and do an assessment for you, we're happy to do that. You can reach us at svin.biz, that's Silicon Valley Insider, svin.biz, or toll free at 888-828-7846. And we look forward to having you come and join us if you're interested. Give us a call or send us a note on the web, and we'll see you again next week.
You've been listening to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler. For questions or comments on today's program, or to schedule a complimentary consultation with Keith or Jonathan about your business, call 1-888-828-SVIN. That's 1-888-828-7846. 888-828-SVIN. Be sure to listen again.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.